You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
The world is filled with many questions, such as, did giants exist?
What is junk DNA? Does it mean that you're trash?
Do you ever wonder if aliens have underwater bases in our oceans, and that's why there are so many UFO sightings off the coasts of islands all over the world?
How serious even is climate change, and when should we start building our rafts?
Hello, everyone. You may recognize me as Gabby from the History of Everything podcast.
And my name is Bruna, and you don't recognize me from anything yet.
Together, we're two scientists who explore the answers to these questions and many, many more in our new podcast,
Mystery of Everything,
available everywhere you get your podcasts.
Monster House presents...
Monster Talk's a proud member of the Airwave Media Podcast Network, home of such shows as Kick-Ass News, Movie Therapy, and Therapist Uncensored. If you'd like to advertise on this show, contact sales at advertisecast.com. This episode contains a brief mention of suicide. If you or someone in your life is struggling, please know that there is help available 24 hours in the U.S., by dialing 988. Thank you.
It's actually quite unlike anything we've ever seen before.
A giant, hairy creature, part ape, part man.
In Loch Ness, a 24-mile-long bottomless lake in the highlands of Scotland, it's a creature known as the Loch Ness Monster.
Monster Talk. Monster Talk.
Welcome to Monster Talk, the science show about monsters. I'm Blake Smith.
And I'm Karen Stolzner.
Hey there, listeners. We're back with part two of our coverage of monster pigs. Dr. John Mayer with the Savannah River National Laboratory in Aiken, South Carolina, has spent 5 decades studying pigs and was involved in several of the media sensation giant pig stories that were popular in the first decade of the 21st century. In part two of our interview, we will be covering specific cases and what the real story was behind them. If you missed part one, do check it out because it is chock full of interesting pig facts and help clear up some persistent myths about how these animals change when they go feral.
Monster Talk.
Well, thanks for continuing this conversation with us, Dr. Mayer. I am so excited now because this has been a topic that I've been wanting to address since before we even created this show. There were some really exciting news stories that came out about giant pigs. And when I was looking for an expert, I found you because of your pig research and then discovered that you're directly involved with understanding these cases. So I am super stoked to talk about this. So you want to...
Before, I think Hogzilla is going to follow me to my grave. Well, yes.
You want to kick this off, Karen? It's like...
Yeah. So feral hogs in the media. So as a reminder for people tuning in now, what's the difference between a feral and domestic pig?
A feral pig is basically just a wild pig that is solely of domestic ancestry, either one or more generations removed from domestication. So if you've got a domestic pig that gets loose and goes wild, and again, domestic pigs go wilder quicker than any other species of domestic animal that we have, they would become, by definition, a feral pig. Feral pig, feral hog, feral swine. I'm not too worried about the noun. And then all of their offspring, assuming you don't get some wild boar genetic input into that population, would also be feral pigs. So, again, one or more generations removed from domestication.
So you and I briefly talked about this offline when we were getting set up, but how big of a problem is the feral hog population in the United States? How big in scope and how big of a damage? I mean, I know it causes a lot of farm damage, but do we have numbers on what that looks like?
Well, if you go back in history, back into early part of the 20th century, introduced wild pigs in the U.S., which were primarily feral pigs, wild pigs solely domestic ancestry. You had a few populations of either pure or hybridized Eurasian wild boar that had been brought in by wealthy sportsmen to provide a new huntable big game animal, and they stuck them in a fenced hunting preserve, and pigs don't fence well either, and they got out of all those. So you had populations of mostly feral pigs, but then some wild boar and some hybrids here in the U.S. They were found in about 20 states, and they numbered about 2 million animals. Starting the early part of the 20th century and then getting into the mid-20th century, these animals began to pick up steam as a huntable big game resource. And in the 1950s, 1960s, and 1970s, you had a number of state game and fish departments that were trying to promote these animals as huntable big game. Even to the point that they were actively stocking them in certain areas, and they had a game status, and they had a bag limit and a season and whatnot, and you had to have a license.
Wow.
And so they were pushing all these animals, pushing all this on the hunters in this country as a new huntable big game resource. And that whole program was very successful. And so what happened was a lot of people figured out that, hey, these things are fun to hunt, even with a hint of danger. Doggone, they're good to eat, even healthier for you than domestic pork. And in the form of a large boar, they can represent a pretty impressive trophy. So the interest in wild pigs as game animals just in the late 20th century just literally exploded. I call it the pig bomb. And it went off nationally. And so we went from 20 states and 2 million animals to, we actually had a maximum of 48 states that reported the presence of these animals. And currently the numbers are estimated to be around 7 million nationwide.
Wow.
Well, pigs are, again, they're opportunistic omnivores. They'll eat pretty much anything, and they're very active foragers. And in foraging, they can do a lot of damage, especially their rooting. And if there's an agricultural crop out there, they'll eat it. If there's a deer fawn they can find, they'll eat it. They tear up wetlands. They tear up golf courses. They tear up cemeteries. They run into our vehicles to the tune of around $100 million a year.
Wow.
They will, it's very rare, but they will attack people. We've had, that I know of, we've had 5 fatal wild pig attacks here in the U.S. since the 1800s. Probably more, but that's all I've ever been able to dig up. The most recent one was in coastal Texas in 2019. A poor woman was attacked by a herd of wild pigs, and they killed her and actually ate part of her.
Wow.
Very
grim incident.
It's gruesome.
So you add up all this damage, and you're looking well up into the billions of dollars every year in the U.S. is what these pigs are costing us. And currently, we've got African swine fever that's bouncing around Eurasia and North Africa. It has popped over and showed up in Haiti here in the Western Hemisphere. Fortunately, it hasn't made it into the U.S. There is no cure. There's no vaccine for African swine fever. If you as a pig farmer, if your pigs suddenly contract or come up with African swine fever, the only course of action that there is they will depopulate. The government's going to come in and kill every one of your animals.
Yep.
China in 2019 had an estimated, what was it? I think around 40 million domestic pigs. And when they got African swine fever, they ended up having to euthanize over half of them.
Wow.
Well, that was so 40 sad. Million, 400 million. It was a lot of wild, a lot of domestic pigs, and they had to do them in. If it ever hit the U.S., if ASF ever got into the U.S., that would be the death knell to the U.S. pork industry, and would probably end up costing, you know, the economic impact would be around $900 billion.
Wow.
So, you know,
how likely is that to happen?
Well, the USDA is actively trying to keep that out of this country. They're working very closely with our European partners. They're also working on a vaccine. Haven't cracked that nut yet, but they are working on it. The concern is that it's going to come in from Eastern Asia. It's going to come across the Pacific. And right. There are people that show up at airports with raw pig heads, with uncooked sausage. We've actually got a beagle brigade now in all our international airports that go around and sniff the luggage looking for pig parts.
So I've been through that. I didn't know it was amazed, pig parts.
You'd be amazed what they come up with.
Wow.
Unfortunately, all it's going to take is somebody to fly into San Francisco with a bunch of uncooked sausage, and they go through customs and immigration, and they find it, and it gets confiscated. Gets thrown in the trash, gets taken down to the landfill, the Guadalupe landfill down in San Jose, and gets thrown in the landfill down there. Well, it happens to be that there are several thousand wild pigs that forage in that landfill every day. Landfill's not fenced. And all it's going to take is one of those to ingest that contaminated, uncooked pork, and then you've got ASF in our wild population, and we've never been able to deal with disease outbreaks in our wild population very efficiently. We're
not that good with humans.
We're getting rid of swine brucellosis and pseudo rabies, which is it's a herpes virus in the U.S. by the year 2000, and we achieved that in our domestic population. But we've never been able to do that with our wild pigs. And there are still endemic pockets of both swine brucellosis and pseudo-rabies in our wild pigs. Swine brucellosis it only affects pigs, but it also affects people. So if people contract swine brucellosis, Brucella suis, you have symptoms that are very similar to flu symptoms. So you get these flu symptoms and you know you get through it like you normally do with the flu, and another week or two and it's gone, and I got rid of the flu. Then a couple of months later, you come down with the same symptoms again. This time they're a little bit worse, but again you recover. And the problem with Brucella is, with brucellosis, is that our medical community has a lot of difficulty diagnosing it. They think it's the flu. They think it's something else, some other pathogen, but they don't really land on brucellosis. And bottom line is, there is no cure, and it will continue you're going to continue to show symptoms, and it's going to continue to get worse and worse and worse. It won't kill you, but it will be so debilitating that you won't be functional.
Oh, that's terrifying.
I was told by a friend who's a veterinarian that he personally knew of two veterinarians that both contracted brucellosis, and they knew what was in the offing for them. There is no cure, and they both committed suicide. So that's pretty serious. The other one that I was talking about, pseudorabies virus, PRV is something that pigs get, and young pigs tend to, you know, the fatality rate tends to be a little bit higher with them, but the older pigs, they get sick, and you can have aborted litters and whatnot, but very often they'll survive it. However, if another mammal, be it a cat or a dog or a rabbit or another carnivore, gets pseudorabies, it's basically 100% fatal. So if you've got wild pigs in South Florida that have pseudorabies virus, they're carriers for that. And again, it may not kill them. They'll live. If they get taken down by a Florida panther and the panther eats the muscle from that animal, that's a dead cat, 100%. Hunting dogs very often if you've got catch dogs that they go up and grab pigs and hold them till the hunter gets up there. If they grab an animal that's got pseudorabies virus and they contract it, that's a dead dog. So, and it's just, that's an impact that we're seeing with a lot of our wildlife now coming from pigs. And again, there's no cure or solution for that. And we've not been able to get that under control. Sorry to be so grim.
I just wanted to follow up on Blake's question asking about feral hogs and the problem in the United States. And you've just talked a lot about disease being a problem overseas, but I wonder if there are particular problems in other countries with feral hogs.
Oh, again, they do the same amount of damage over there that they do here, whether it's a native wild boar population in Germany or an introduced wild pig population in Georgia. They're okay. Both cause the same damage to the environment. They're both going to raid agricultural crops. They're both going to run into vehicles. They're both rare, but they're both going to attack people. And then you're going to have all your disease impacts. So it's the same in the native range as it is in the introduced range for that species.
So of all the dangers, I did not hear you mention giant pig as one of the risks of.
But yes.
Going back in time, back to like, I think 2004 was when the story of Hogzilla hit the news. And how did you get involved with that pig story? And I'm guessing that once you get attached to giant pigs, they just keep glomming onto you, right?
All right. So Hogzilla was killed down on the hatchery farm in Alapaha, Georgia in June of 2004. It went viral on the internet, you know, what was it, supposedly 11 feet long, 1,000 pounds.
Yeah.
And they had this picture of this thing that they had strung up from a front end loader. It was a backhoe. Sorry, a backhoe.
Yeah, backhoe.
The same backhoe
yep.
we used to dig up the remains. After all that went viral, a producer from National Geographic contacted me and asked me would it be worth going down and digging it up? Would there be anything to find? I said, yeah, well, you know, given the soil and whatnot, and it hasn't been that long, you'd probably still have enough down there to try to figure out. And looking at the remains, you can figure out how big that animal was. You could take a pig skull and do a breadth across the zygoma, across the zygomatic arches, and then do a cranial height, multiply those two together just to get a two-dimensional size of that cranium. And interestingly enough, it's got a very high correlation, an R-squared of like 0.91, 1.0 is an absolute 1-to-1 correlation. 0.91 is a very strong correlation with the weight. So you can take a pig skull and you can actually come up with a fairly accurate weight of what that animal should be. So I said, it'd be interesting to dig it up. So they said, okay, well, they wanted to go down and do that. I said, well, you know, that's a hoax. I said, I'm sorry, wild pigs just don't get that big. It's just, there aren't enough good groceries out there. And, look at the size of that animal. Look at the tusks, how it was growing in a circle. Classic domestic characteristics. And I said, the real story here is not a big dead pig, but what's happening with wild pig populations globally. There's a pig bomb going off on this planet, and nobody knows about it. And so they very patiently listened to me for several months. And then in November of 2004, we went down and dug it up. Same backhoe they used to hang it up. We dug up the body. Interestingly enough, because the tusks are so impressive, they cut off the head and buried that in a different location because they thought somebody was going to come in and steal it. So they buried the body in another location. And so we went down with a backhoe and dug up the remains of the body itself, and I took measurements off the body, all of which were consistent with an animal of about 800 pounds, not 1,000. Wasn't 11 feet long. Actually, the 11 or 12 feet long, whatever it was, they were measuring, that when they hung it up with the backhoe, they were measuring from the tip of the nose all the way up to the foot that was tied to the backhoe. And that probably was 11 to 12 feet. That's not what you measure when you're talking about the length
right,
of the pig.
Right, right.
And then we dug up the skull. Again, it was in a different location. And it and I cleaned it up, actually took down to one of the ponds there and cleaned it up and took measurements. And again, the measurements on the skull were consistent with a pig that was about 800 pounds, not 1,000. So, and there was some disagreement among the folks down there as to what the validity of that weight was, you know, where it had actually come from. So.
Yeah. Where do you weigh a 1,000-pound pig?
Anyway, so they finished the show, and what they did was they took the Hogzilla story and they wrapped the pig bomb around it very interestingly to get that out, which again in my mind was the real story, not the, right. the big dead pig. And when it aired in April of 2005, that Sunday night, it was the most viewed Explore episode ever on National Geographic.
I saw it.
Cool.
beating out its nearest competitor by over 200%, and the second most viewed show of anything on the National Geographic channel ever.
Wow.
So we were on Good Morning America the next morning, that Monday morning.
Cool.
The other guy that was down there did a genetics workup and said, so this is an animal that looks like a big reddish brown domestic pig. And they did a genetics analysis and they said it was part Hampshire. Now, a Hampshire pig is black with a white shoulder belt. I didn't see that on Hogzilla. They also said that it was part wild boar. So I'm a little skeptical of the accuracy of that genetic analysis. I'd love to have some of the researchers that I work with redo that genetic analysis. I bet they would come up with a more accurate answer. Maybe it's right, but it, you know, the animal itself didn't look like it fit that.
I mean, obviously, genetics can be real tricky, but if a domestic pig and a European boar crossed, I would expect it to be smaller, not bigger. Is that a mistake?
Well, again, depends on how many, how young was it when...
Well, there you go,
You stuck in the pen and, you know, did you stuff it full of Purina pig chow until it got to be old enough?
You mentioned that I wasn't part of the documentary. This is, I'm trying to remember from 2004 or 5, but that the place where the pig was living was a fish farm with high protein.
It was a fish farm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Their claim to fame was they were the home of the giant Georgia brim. They had basically a lapomid, a bluegill that I forget how big it was, but it was something like 8 pounds. So.
That's an enormous brim. But
that's an enormous brim. Yeah. I'm an avid fly rider. I'll admit I've never caught a brim that big. They also had an active pig hunting operation.
Did this serve as any form of advertisement at all? Did that help?
they tried to make the most of it.
I bet they did.
When it came out.
Yeah.
The hatchery farm is right along the Alapaha River. So,
hello, I'm Paul Giamatti.
And I'm Stephen Asma.
Each week on Chinwag, we dig into the weird topics you wonder about, that you care about, the stuff none of us are totally sure of, like the Bermuda Triangle, Mothman, consciousness, philosophy, UFOs, ghosts, or, say, Bigfoot.
So who's to say that there's not alien species that are Sasquatch?
Like I've seen a ghost, and I would hear something walking and breathing.
Maybe every path is right. I will accept as a premise that every path is right.
That is a face on Mars. Eyes, nose, it kind of looked like Wilson the volleyball.
Some people enjoy the waves or whatever crashing, and I enjoy listening to a quantum physics audiobook.
I do think there are many things in the world that we just don't understand and probably won't understand.
That's our whole show.
So join us every Wednesday on all major podcast platforms and find us on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at ChinwagPod and Wagon.
There is so much in our universe that remains hidden. Until now. My name is Kristen Seavey, and I have some stories that you might want to hear on the podcast, The Hidden Staircase. Whether it's true crime, paranormal occurrences, or perhaps something beyond the stars, I keep all their stories safe in my library. So come with me down the staircase. Pull up a chair and let's discover the enigmas that remain hidden from us all. Listen to The Hidden Staircase now, wherever you get podcasts.
And again, they had these commercial pig hunts. Now, several months after, still the summer of 2004, Kent Kammermeyer, who's retired now, he was the biologist for Georgia DNR that was the wild pig guy. He was the guy that handled all the wild pig studies and any wild pig questions or issues or whatnot. They went to Kent. I've known him for a long time. After all that came out in the news, he said a guy showed up at his door and said, "Let me tell you about that big hog down in Lapaha." He said, "I was down there in April and to hunt wild hogs." You know, their claim to fame is they have huge pigs. And they put me up on a stand, and I was there all day, didn't see anything. And they came and got me in the truck, picked me up, and they could tell I was a little bit disappointed because I didn't get anything. And they said, "Do you want to kill a big hog?" And I said, "Well, yeah, that's why I came here." And so they said, "Okay, well, go ahead and get in the truck." And they took him to another part of the property and went out into this open field in the forested area. And they said, "Okay, well, get your rifle and get out and stand right there." And he's thinking, this is a little strange. He swears that they then went over to the woods line, opened up the gate on a pen he hadn't seen when they pulled up, and they herded out the exact same animal. Herded it over next to him, and they said, "Okay, there it is, shoot it." And the guy claimed to have said, "Well, that ain't right. I'm not doing that. It's not what hunting's all about." And they were a little bit pissed at him. But they then tried to herd the pig back in the pen, and they finally got it back in the pen, but it really wasn't crazy about going back in that pen. So you can only imagine that that happened again at some point in time, and they couldn't get it back in the pen. It was a big pig.
Yeah.
You know, any pig that size is not something you're going to just push around and make go where you necessarily want it to go. Mm-hmm. And you know, as they're standing there, and they must have bought the pig from somebody, as it was walking off into the Alapaha River swamp, you can imagine that Ken Holyoke, the owner of Hatchery Farm, turns to his trusty assistant there, Chris Griffin, and says, "Shoot that thing before somebody else does," which is exactly what he was quoted as saying on the National Geographic special.
Interesting.
So I'm sorry. I just don't believe it. It's a, you know.
That's the
true story of Hogzilla.
I was going to say it's an awfully fishy pig story.
But and quite honestly, the morphological analysis that I did on the skull, it came out as 100% domestic pig.
There you go.
So that started it all. Okay. So that started this explosion of monster pigs. The next one was just south of Fayetteville, Georgia. Blake noticed all these things are coming out of Georgia, right?
I have noticed that.
Something's going on.
So the next one was a big pig that was in a suburban area, the Brooks neighborhood south of Fayetteville. Huge black pig. Guy shot it. They called it the son of Hogzilla. They called it the Brooks Beast. I went down there and met the guy and actually got him connected up with the taxidermist. We did two different TV shows on that one too. again, it turns out that morphologically, this animal, again, was 100% domestic pig. The director of the Fayetteville Animal Control called me after, I think, the first TV show that we did. And he said, let me tell you about that pig. He said, we know that pig. It was owned by a guy who was getting divorced. And to mess with him, his wife would go over to his house and open the gate and let all his pigs out in a suburban area. And he said, we caught that animal twice. The first time it went in the trailer, no problem. We brought it back, put it back in the pen. Second time was a little bit harder. But we got it back in the trailer, got it back home. And he said the third time was the Friday before it was shot. And we pulled up with the trailer. The pig saw us there and said, and took off running. Mm-hmm. He said we were actually actively working on a contract to bring in somebody else to try to catch the pig the following week when it was shot.
Wow.
He said it was a very nice animal. Wasn't mean, but it was big.
Yeah.
And the concern was that it was going to run. It was loose. So it was there day and night loose. And the concern was it was going to run in front of somebody's car and there was going to be a serious accident. Somebody's going to get hurt.
Right.
So they were trying to get it captive and unfortunately got shot.
Oh.
So again, so much for the monster wild pig story.
Right.
I guess the one that received the most grief was monster pig. And that probably was another, like the son of Hogzilla, probably was an animal that was about 1,000 pounds. It was a big pig. Morphologically, it was 100% domestic. And when the story finally came out, what happened was, Jason Stone, his father had, arranged a hunt for him on a hunting preserve. Who said they had a large wild pig that they were willing to bring somebody in and charge him to go hunt. And the kid went in and hunted it with a large centerfire handgun. Made the news, again, a large animal. But ultimately, the truth came out. The people that owned the pig, the couple that owned the pig, came forward and said that, no, this wasn't a wild animal. This was a domestic boar that we had. His name was Fred.
Oh, man.
He was not a particularly nice animal. He was always breaking out on us. He was mean to the sows. He would beat up the sows in trying to breed them. We didn't like him. He wasn't a nice animal. You know, not an animal you want to have on your farm. So they sold him to the... to that hunting club, hunting preserve, and they then offered him up as a game animal, and Jason Stone went in and shot him. So, so much for these monster wild pigs. They just don't exist. I'm sorry.
Right.
You know, when the truth comes out, pigs are big. Pigs, you know, the largest pig ever documented was Big Bill back in the 1930s. He was 2,200 pounds. So pigs can get big.
Well,
a wild pig, 800 pounds, 1,000 pounds, no. I'm sorry. That's just not going to happen. Like I said, there aren't enough good grocers out in the woods to make that happen.
So with these three stories and the others that you've been mentioning, what did the media get wrong about these giant pig stories?
Well, initially, the media just bit on the fact that they were validly wild animals, where they were validly wild pigs. And they just ran with that. And, you know, that's my advice to the media would be you really need to, with stories like that, you really need to vet what it is you're talking about rather than just, you know, bite it hook, line and sinker and run with it. Cause then you wind up looking like a fool after the fact.
They don't seem to care. Like they don't do any work on a story that seems fun and sensational. And then when it's wrong, they don't seem to be aware that this knocks their credibility.
But, yeah, you don't
be accountable.
Yeah.
So weirdly, you know, as a monster enthusiast, I honed my photography research skills on ghosts and Bigfoot. And so when I saw these giant pig things, it was so obvious that there was forced perspective in every shot. Like every one of them, the animal was closer than the hunter to the camera, which makes them look bigger. And that's normal for fish photos and this and that. But if you're claiming that you've got something that's extraordinary, you would think that there would be some bar of at least minimal investigation into whether this was a true thing or not before you paste it all over the news. But apparently not.
The news media is in a constant race to get out stories.
Yeah.
Not everybody else in the news media. So
even back then, that's a good point. Yeah.
They're looking for the most sensational, the most unusual. And, you know, they don't take the time to vet some of their stories, and they run with it. And then they, oddly enough, don't retract it later on when the truth comes out.
You get
a Rhonda Shear that really went after monster pig. She went after monster pig and the Stone family. I actually had the skull on loan from Mike Stone for a number of years when I measured it and I used to use it in talks and whatnot. And then one day Mike called me up and said, would you mind shipping that back? I said, well, of course, it's your skull. I mean, it's not mine. So we went ahead and UPS'd it back to them, and they sold it, and basically paid for Jason's college education.
Well, so good for him.
What? Figured out.
Wow.
There was something good that came out of it.
Golly, this has been so informative, and I really appreciate you taking so much time with us. I feel like I've learned a lot and sort of scratched them.
Too.
Yeah. Also, I bet they did. I hope they did. But we do have a final question we like to ask our first time guests. So hopefully you've thought of this a little bit. But what is your favorite monster?
Oh gosh, there's no question about that. The Loch Ness monster, Nessie. Come on.
All right. Okay.
The plesiosaur that survived in one of the Scottish lochs.
Yeah.
That's such a great story.
It's a favorite of ours. It was. It's still
perennial.
We've been doing this for what, 13 years, a long time.
12, 13
years. Yeah, something like that. It's been a minute. But one of our early episodes was about Nessie, and it's kind of my elevator pitch for the whole show is, you know, we could have talked about, is Nessie real? But instead, we thought, if it were a plesiosaur, what would it be like? So we had a paleontologist come on and tell us all about plesiosaurs, and I learned so much, and I still marvel at that episode. It still holds up so well. But
One of the best.
Yeah, so good. Anyway, this was fantastic and a wonderful addition to the show. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you so much for your decades of work on this topic. That, you know, I tomorrow when I have sausage and bacon, I will be remembering you.
I'll be remembering you when I don't.
Thank you so much. Have a great night.
Thank you, Jack. Yeah.
Thank you. You too.
Monster Talk.
You've been listening to Monster Talk, the science show about monsters. I'm Blake Smith.
And I'm Karen Stolzner.
You just heard part two of our two-part interview with Dr. John Mayer about feral hogs and the facts behind the media sensation of alleged 1,000-pound porkers roaming the farmlands of the United States. We appreciate Dr. Mayer making time for us and helping us be better informed about this topic, and also alerting us to the real dangers that may come from feral hogs and how hog diseases are poised to change our lives if they get through our borders to these populations. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Monster Talk. Each episode, we strive to bring you the very best in monster-related content with a focus on bringing scientific skepticism into the conversation. If you enjoy Monster Talk, we now have a variety of ways to support the show, all with convenient links at monstertalk.org/support. That's monstertalk.org/support. We have links there to our Patreon page as well as a donation button. Another great way to support the show is to buy books from our Amazon Monster Talk wish list, which directly helps us with our research. We love used books very much, so don't feel compelled to buy new ones, and we love Kindle so we can share our digital libraries with each other. And finally, without spending any money at all, you can support us by leaving a positive review at iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Positive reviews help keep us visible in iTunes, which is a great way to help us find new listeners. And please share our show on your favorite social media platforms. Monster Talk theme music is by Peach Stealing Monkeys. Thank you so much for listening.
Been a Monster House presentation.